You're listening to an On the Move Media Co. production.
Boston, more than any other car, so I talk about you want to be out conservatively, you don't want to get, but Boston's really hard because all the excitement around Boston, you got the downhill start, and it's just so easy to get out too fast. And what happens is your last 10K of Boston can be incredibly fast if you didn't beat your legs up too bad in the downhills in the early part. So you got to hold back in the early part to take advantage of how fast the last 10K can be, because nothing hurts worse than trying to run hard the last 10K if you beat your quads up so bad in the downhills. You won't run slower. The downhills will feel worse at the end. But you've got a stretch that's relatively fast the last 10K here. But once you get over heartbreak, once you get over, you know, the Newton Hills, if you've got anything left in you, you can take advantage of how fast it can be coming in. But if you ran too hard on the first 10K of the downhills because you think, oh, I feel so great, and it's downhill, it's just, I'm going to put some time in the bank. Time in the bank is the biggest marathon mistake you'll ever make in any marathon. In Boston, it's magnified.
That was Keith Hansen. This is Marnie Salop. Thanks for tuning into my podcast, Marnie on the Move. Each week, I will be inviting interesting, innovative movers and shakers to join me on the show and share their story. You will discover and hear from thought leaders, experts, influencers, and entrepreneurs from the worlds of wellness, sports, beauty, fitness, fashion, and more. Marnie on the Move will feature an eclectic mix of people I know, work with, and think are generally doing cool things. On each episode, I sync up with my guests about life, career, and training, and showcase their expertise and story. Hello, welcome, and welcome back to the Marnie on the Move podcast, Boston Marathon Edition. This week, we teamed up with the Westin Hotels and Resorts, Westin Seaport Boston, and Westin Copley Place to bring you this series of six conversations from the heart of the city and Marathon Central with Olympic, professional, elite, and recreational runners. Today on the Marnie on the Move podcast, episode 6 of the Marnie on the Move Boston Marathon Edition, I am syncing up with world-renowned professional runner Zach Panning and coach and co-founder of the Hanson Brooks Distance Project, Keith Hansen. We are talking about the Boston Marathon, running, coaching, training, and more. You are going to love this conversation. If you do, feel free to share it on your social channels. Tell your friends. Leave a 5-star review on Apple or Spotify. Shout out to Westin Hotels and Resorts. Westin Hotels and Resorts is hospitality's global leader in well-being for more than a decade. They empower guests to transcend the rigors of travel while on the road through the brand's 6 pillars of well-being: sleep well, eat well, move well, feel well, work well, and play well. At more than 240 hotels and resorts in over 40 countries and territories, guests can benefit from distinct wellness experiences, including the brand's iconic and award-winning Heavenly Bed, signature Westin workout offerings such as its fitness studio with TRX fitness equipment, and its versatile gear lending program featuring the latest in recovery and strength training from Hyperice and Bala. I had the pleasure of experiencing this firsthand while in town for the Boston Marathon when staying at the Westin Boston Seaport. I got to experience their Run Westin program, went for a run in the area with one of their signature maps, and had an amazing time. In 2023, Westin Hotels and Resorts teamed up with Abbott World Marathon Majors to get travelers race ready from start to finish in the first ever hospitality collaboration. The collaboration, activating at select Westin properties in Boston, London, Berlin, Chicago, New York City, and Tokyo, will offer new tailored experiences to help marathoners of all levels get to the starting line and cross the finish line, as well as offer exclusive perks to celebrate the achievements of 6-star finishers. If you're headed out on a racecation or looking to explore a city through running, I highly recommend checking in to the nearest Westin Hotel and Resort. Now, on to my conversation with Zach and Keith. Zach, in addition to the BAA 5K, what are you up to this weekend in Boston?
This weekend, I got to run the 5K yesterday.
Yeah.
A cool experience for sure, just to be on the streets of Boston this weekend. A really special place this time of year. especially this weekend. So, and then the rest of the weekend, I get to be on the lead vehicle for the women's race, which will be really, really special for me. Just my first chance to really see the course and get a feel for the energy that Boston brings. And so I'm super excited about that, to see everything, to experience the weekend, because I know in the future I'll want to race here myself in the marathon. And so to see everything and to experience it is a huge deal for me.
That's very smart of you to be here checking out the course and doing some major recon. I'm here vision boarding, so just kind of planting seeds for getting into it as well. You've never done Boston before.
No, yeah, I've run a few marathons, but Boston, it's something that I definitely want to check off the list. It's a bucket list item for every runner, I'd say, and that's probably the question that I get the most as a professional athlete.
Yeah.
Have you run Boston? Did you qualify for Boston? So to be able to do that and do it successfully is something that I want to be able to do, and so making sure that we do that, the proper recon, make sure we're ready to go when we do it. It's a big deal. So
what does it feel like for you to be here this weekend with like everyone from the running community and all of these just amazing people?
Yeah, it's really a who's who. There's so many people here. You know, everywhere I'm walking, I see the jackets and the hats and stuff. So it's a busy weekend, and that's another reason that it's good to come here this weekend, just to see all that, to experience that almost shock, culture shock a little bit of running culture shock.
Yeah, it really is.
So yeah, it's good to be here, good to see all that and really help prepare you for that.
Awesome. And when did you join the Hansons team and Brooks?
Yeah, I joined the Hansons right out of college in 2019. So
okay.
This is my fifth year with the Hansons, coming off the Olympic trials, my first Olympic trials for the marathon. So yeah, we're continuing to step in the right direction with the marathon and everything. I think that's definitely like my favorite event. It's something that I fell in love with the first time I trained for it, and it's something that I'll always be in love with. So the Hansons do a great job of preparing us really, really well for the event, and I have full faith in them to get me ready for Boston when that comes.
Keith, how did you get into running and coaching?
Oh, gosh.
Take me back.
All right. My brother and I have been doing this for quite some time. We started our stores in 1991. We started the Hansons Assistance Project in 1999.
Yeah.
Brooks became our sponsor in 2003, so it's probably one of the longest sports sponsorships out there right now.
Right.
We've been a long time with Brooks, but personally, I started running when I was a little kid. My brother, who is the coach and co-coach of the program, does all the schedules and such mm-hmm. for everybody, but we work together on a lot of different things with it. It's related to both the stores and the program. But he was starting to run in college right around the same time I was starting, about 5 years, 5 grades behind him. So it's
okay.
Like, so I was starting to run then. So I started running a lot of stuff with him then and ran a lot of stuff when I was younger and ran in college myself at Michigan State University. And so definitely been around the sport for a long, long time.
And now flash forward, Zach Panning. Like, what's your coaching like? What's your training like? You know,
yeah.
How are you getting Zach ready for this next marathon eventually?
Zach is a great student of the game, and he makes it easy for us because Zach is so motivated to do so well and works so hard at it. And so we just love working with Zach because he's good. Not only that, we have a big team, you know, and Zach has become a big leader on that team. So he leads by example and also, you know, is just a person that's positive about things and will work through, you know, all the obstacles that you have in distance running. It doesn't come easy, and people that have been in the sport know, and there's ups and downs in the sport. And this week he got to run the 5K out there, but was a little bit sick coming into it. So he wanted to get out and get the experience, but you know, he knows the downs and obviously he's going to have a great, he's run very well, but he's going to run some much better times than his current personal best are and have some experiences that he hasn't yet incurred, even though he's been on the world championship team and ran great out in Budapest at the world championships. And so he's, But he's got a lot more to look forward to, and we're so honored and excited to be working with him.
So, Zach, what about you? Where did you get your start in running? Where did it all begin?
Yeah. I started running to get in shape for other sports. I think that's the story for a lot of kids that get into running. Is just it begins as you go out for the cross country team to get in shape for basketball or to get in shape for another sport, and then slowly, I think you. A lot of times those kids end up falling in love with running, whether that's because of the people, because of the feeling of getting better and improving your personal best. For me, it was just a combination of all that. Just like at first, I didn't really enjoy the running side of things, but I loved the people that I got to see every day as a freshman in high school. And those relationships are what kept me coming back, kept me running, even though I didn't fully enjoy it.
Right.
And then slowly I started improving and seeing that improvement and getting a little bit faster each week at cross country meets. I started to fall in love with that feeling. And so combine those two, that's where I'm at today. I want to be a part of a team. And that's another reason I joined the Hansons, is because we do have that team aspect. We run cross country as a team. We're training for marathons typically as a team, and so to be able to run for someone else is pretty special. And then we're just continuing to improve, make ourselves a little bit better each and every day, and that's been what has pushed me through the years.
What do you love about the sport?
I would say just that feeling. Like I said, the feeling of digging deep. And getting more out of yourself today than you were able to get out of yourself yesterday. That feeling of improvement, and sometimes it comes slowly, and sometimes it's a real grind.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're able to fall in love with that grind, the results just take care of themselves.
Yeah. And I feel like you said, like yesterday, you weren't feeling well, like you are just coming off the flu. I mean, as a professional athlete, or as any athlete, if you sign up, as an amateur athlete, if you sign up for a race and then you start to feel sick, like, you have to make a call.
Yeah.
Like, are you going to do it? Like, how do you do that? Like, how do you do that? Like, what's the process in your mind?
Yeah, I think it's never fun to put a bad result on a piece of paper. That's always something that's a struggle. But again, it is a grind. There's not every day is going to be perfect. But I'm in love with the sport of running, and
right.
I'm in love with weekends like this where I see so many other people that are also in love with the sport of running, and that reinvigorates that fire that burns within you to continue to get better, is seeing all these people that are doing the same thing that you're doing and enjoying it and finding joy and making sure that they're doing the most that they can to do the same thing. So that love for running is what I think pushes you to run when things aren't feeling great and push through that and all that good stuff. So,
'cause we all have like good days and bad days, and you just have to kind of remember the good days when you're in the bad days. How do you advise, Keith, your athletes? I mean, you coach so many athletes, how do you advise people mentally to get through challenges out on the race course?
Well, I mean, challenges are part of the sport, and those people that can learn to overcome obstacles and become very, very consistent. You need to know that you got to go through the downs to get to the ups. It's just what you got to do. And if you're those people that learn to balance that and learn how to do that, learn to fight through rough patches, always end up better on the other side. So it's like, it's easy to say, all right, I'm not doing well right now, I got to back off. You just got to kind of push through, and you'll be surprised yourself oftentimes what you can accomplish if you push through things that feel like you're a little bit, you're in a bad spot. But, I mean, obviously you got to listen to your body, and you got to take rest at certain times and such too. But you've got to be able to learn to run uncomfortable, and you got to learn to deal with discomfort. And all those things just make you stronger mentally and also physically. So you can't back down when you're uncomfortable all the time. So that's the biggest challenge, is just learning how to deal with that. And something like Zach had mentioned, he loves the sport and the process. You got to learn to love the process, because if you're a professional distance runner, it's a long and tedious process. So it's fun to be a part of a team because there's other people sharing that with you. But you've got to enjoy that process. It's like anything else in life. You've got to enjoy the process. And once you start enjoying the process, you do well at the process. You prepare yourself better. And then the results become better because you're doing all the work required and learning how to enjoy that part of it too.
And this is the question for Keith, right? So how do you coach athletes when it comes to the wind? Like, what is a good strategy for mentally and physically running into headwinds and tailwinds?
Well, the first thing we have to remember all the time is that, you know, especially in what we're doing, running is about competition. And your competitors are experiencing the same thing. And I know sometimes you're competing within yourself and you say, I want to get my best time or my best performance, and adjustments need to be made. But I'll go to what I work with my athletes, and I work with a lot of people that are competitive, and saying, don't forget what running is. It's not always a time trial. Running is about getting ahead of to the finish line before your competitors get to the finish line. And so wind becomes a tactical thing. And actually, as a coach and with athletes that I have that are very educated and smart athletes, I sometimes don't mind that at all, because I think any condition that is not ideal added to it, I think puts people that are going to think about it and prepare for it at an advantage.
Right.
Because, you know, I always say this is a comment I say to, even when we do like high school and middle school camps, and I say to them, I go, weather should always be an advantage. Because no matter what the weather is, other people can be negatively affected by it. And if you don't become negatively affected by it, then it's an advantage for you. So as long as you say, the weather's what the weather is, and I got it. Now, going back to maybe part of your question is, what do I do? You know, my goal was to run whatever time in the marathon, and now we've got this really bad weather coming in. I'm going to have a headwind, or it's going to be hot, or it's going to be – you do have to make adjustments, and you have to then kind of put yourself, you know, make your own lists. Here's my best marathon with a 15-mile-an-hour headwind. Right. Here's my best marathon. But by forging ahead in an event like the marathon and saying, I am going to run 8 minutes per mile every mile, and that was my goal with perfect weather – and now all of a sudden I've got bad weather, well, you've got to make an adjustment. You say, because if you do that, your second half of the marathon is going to be so much worse that you will be worse off than if you didn't make the adjustment in the first place. So you've got to kind of find other ways to motivate yourself, other things to do, and say, okay, you know, you might know, I finished, you know, in 372nd last year, you know, whatever it might be, and I want to finish in the top 3,000 this time.
Right.
Well, maybe the weather, if I adjust my race smart, will allow me to improve upon my finish place, which really is more representative of what your performance was than what your actual time is. So it's a matter of adjusting and saying, how do I adjust it and get happy with my performance? Because other people won't adjust it, and other people, in all honesty, will probably run worse than they would have run if it was, you know, even overall place-wise than if it was ideal conditions. So if you make an adjustment, you can improve on where other people maybe didn't make that adjustment.
And do you feel like the wind is like very similar to hills, where you might shorten your stride, or are there any like technical things that you can do?
Well, you're a crowded race like this, and it's windy. You know, you want to find people you can tuck in behind. You know, try to, or if you've got somebody, you know, you've got friends that you're running, or people, a group that you're running with, work on taking turns. You know, saying, hey, I'll take this next mile, you take the mile after that. But you got to find ways to lessen the effect of the wind. But certainly, yeah, it's a major factor. Wind can be challenging. You know, I look at it this way too. You always got to make adjustments when you're running, you know, up a hill, into the wind, whatever it might be. Because if you say, all right, well, I'll run 10 seconds faster this mile because I'm with the wind, that's some of the biggest mistakes people make, is running harder with the wind, thinking they're going to make up the time against the wind.
Right.
Because if you say, oh, well, I got to be 10 seconds a mile slower, and then I faster here because I'll be 10 seconds slower there. If you're going to be 10 seconds slower a mile into the wind, you might be 3 to 4 seconds faster with the wind, but not 10 seconds faster.
Okay.
Because if you're 10 seconds faster, that's implying that it's the same overall time as if there was no wind. And we know it's not. So you might make up slight amount of time, just a couple seconds, 2 or 3 seconds. And obviously, it all varies on if it's 10 mile an hour wind or 25 mile an hour wind. But you're only going to make up maybe half of that, or even 30% of that with the wind. So you got to kind of look at it that way, because that's the mistake people make. They'll say, all right, I got to run this pace, so I'll run this into the wind, or up a hill or down a hill. It's like, you're not going to make up the same amount as you lose, ever.
That was an awesome explanation. So, Zach, back to you. Do you have like certain conditions that are optimal for you running that you like to run in, like weather or hills or flats? Like, what's your favorite?
I mean, obviously, like to run fast, ideal conditions are great. But like he said, like I think it's important to view every type of weather as an advantage for you, as your best weather to run in. I've always been fairly good in heat, I think. So that's something that if I see that something's a marathon's going to be hot, I know that's an advantage for me.
Right.
But I also like running fast. So ideal conditions are nice as well. So I think, yeah, like Keith said, preparing for whatever the weather is going to be like, preparing for the season, the year, the time of year that you're running the marathon is hugely important, just so that on race day you're going to be ready for whatever Mother Nature throws at you.
And so what's your next like big event?
So we are jumping on the track, and so I'll actually run over in London.
Okay.
At the Festival of 10K PBs, which is a really cool event where basically three lanes of the track are open to 10K runners, and the rest of the track, the infield and the outside of the track and on some of the track, is just a bunch of drunk people partying, basically. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's just the energy there is really, really awesome, and it's hard not to run fast when you're surrounded by it. So
yeah.
Super excited about that. And then ideally we'll be running at the Olympic trials for the 10K as
okay.
well in June.
Awesome. That's really cool. So what's your training like now?
It's a lot more stuff on the track, a lot of quicker stuff with teammates, which is nice. We have a lot of guys that are kind of doing some different things, but everybody has been able to kind of do stuff on the track together, which has been pretty special. Again, just that team, the shared pain that we're all experiencing.
Cave.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, a lot more reps on the track right now.
When you are thinking about going onto the road and doing the marathon, like do you ebb and flow between like track and distance? So, like, how does that affect your training back and forth?
I think it's definitely harder to come back to the track from the marathon.
Yeah.
It's harder to come back to those shorter, quicker events coming off of a marathon than it is to go the opposite direction.
Right.
Which is why it's nice to do those shorter events. I think it when you're coming off that 10K or a 5K, it becomes easier then to settle into marathon pace for a long period of time. And it's I think bouncing back and forth just helps you kind of stay fresh, stay ready to attack those long marathon pace workouts and
that makes sense, because it's like it gives you like a little bit of a boost, like mentally, like an adrenaline boost.
Yeah.
Like to do the shorter distances super fast and then to settle into the endurance distance, even though it's still super fast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When it comes to training and mileage, I know this is everybody talks about this, especially when it comes to marathon training. Are you, and this might be a question for Keith, but I mean, are you up there at like 100, 120 miles a week, even if you're doing shorter distance stuff?
I'll get up to about 100 still on the track.
Okay.
Sometimes just a little bit over, and then definitely a lot more during the marathon. So I'll be 130 to 140, during a marathon build at the peak there. So it's a little different, but, we're a very mileage focused, volume focused group. So, a lot of what we do is just that consistent running every day.
Okay.
which leads to high mileage, and just deadens the legs a little bit, prepares you well. So.
And you're used to it. So it's not like you're ever building to that. That's like your normal.
Yeah. I mean, you obviously have to take some breaks every once
right.
in a while.
I was going to ask you.
Yeah. So we'll like after the marathon, I'll take 2 weeks off, and then, you know, I build pretty quick just because of the lifetime mileage. Like I would never advise people to build how I build my mileage.
Right.
You know, I go from zero to 50 or 60 and then to 70 or 80 pretty quick. So definitely not something that I advise people to do. But when you've put in the work and your body is kind of used to that. It almost craves getting back up to that type of mileage again. So it's sort of become second nature a little bit.
Yeah. So Keith, since you're the coach and have been doing this for a few decades, what are your thoughts on the mileage build for the marathon? And not even necessarily for, it can be for anyone that's building, and including I'm asking for a friend also myself.
Obviously, you know, the professionals have the time to get all the rest and all the other things, diet rest, there's other fitness things that they need to do outside of that, you know, and work on some core work and things like that, that allow them to do that. The average person is working 40 hours a week, you know, or more. But in that case, we actually have a book called The Hansen's Marathon Method. And in all honesty, people don't know that the philosophy in, well, some do, but the philosophy of that book is the same as the philosophy of the elites, even though the mileage would be dramatically different. Our philosophy has always been that your overall volume during a training session is very critical, but it's not the most critical thing. Your overall volume, learning your marathon pace, establishing a goal and learning that pace and doing repetitive work at that pace, that's an incredibly important thing as well. But in people often emphasize on our thing, which they say, oh, the elites don't do that, is that we have a 16-mile training run as the longest run in our training program. But we do that in a 60-mile week. And the idea is we try to get most people, if they can, to build up to a 60-mile week, even the masses, which is a lot of time commitment. That's the biggest problem, is the time commitment. Right. We don't do the 20-miler on a 40-mile week. We just think that it's not as productive that way. We feel that the percentage of your weekly mileage is an important way to look at it, that you should try to get your mileage that you know, if you can, if you have the time and you can allow it and you're handling things well, you could go higher than 60 miles a week, which would then allow you to run longer than 16. You know, but people always ask that, and we feel that you're better off, just your overall volume throughout your entire training cycle will better prepare you for the marathon. And we'll run our 16 miler after, you know, in the midst of a hard week, so that you'll run maybe 10 miles a day before and 8 to 10 the day after. So you're not running like other schedules where maybe they're taking a day off or running 3 miles a day before and nothing the day after, and you're getting 23, 24 miles in a three-day period. With our 16-mile time period, you're usually getting, you know, 16 plus a 10 plus an 8. You're getting 34 miles in 3 days.
Ooh,
you know,
I like that.
So that's what you're doing. It's a matter of, you know, so if you look through that, that's kind of, and that's the same thing we have here. You're running on tired legs a little bit and learning to adjust to that. The biggest problem with our, and I told people when we used to do training schedules and we used to do classes for it, and I'd say it very bluntly, is this is the best way, in my opinion, to prepare for a marathon for the masses. What it doesn't do is take your life into account.
Right.
Because oftentimes, you know, say Tuesday is my kid's soccer day, and Friday is my spouse's date day, and you know, so it's a 6 day a week schedule. And it becomes very much of a time commitment, but it's best prepares you. You know, that's all I can say about it. So
that actually sounds really good. And actually, as a triathlete, kind of moving into this marathon space, like I'm used to training on dead legs. Like I'll go for like a 5 hour bike ride, and then the next day I have like a 2 hour run, and I'm really slow, and that's cool. What do you do when you're not training? Like, what's your like relaxation or maybe thing that you're into when you're not running?
Yeah, I kind of a lot of stuff. Just I'm at the gym a lot, so whether I'm in the sauna, sometimes I just float in the pool even. So just kind of resting the legs a little bit, and then doing a lot of prehab, you know, lifting, that sort of stuff as well. But you know, like he said, all those little things that don't seem like a big deal, but when you add up all these little things, they kind of add up to something big. So, you know, I think the most important thing for me is my sleep. I'm getting, you know, 8 to 10 hours of sleep every night. And I think that for me has been something that has really helped me improve over the years. I think once I really dove in and focused on that side of things, things started to come a little easier. I recovered. I was feeling a lot better every day. And so that for me is the most important thing. And then all those other things. But I always tell people as well, just like, I think the most important thing, the best way to become a better runner is to run, right? And so if those, the lifting especially, I think that that's the biggest one, is affecting your ability to hit your mileage and run as much as you can, then it's maybe something you need to look at, because, again, the most important thing, the best way to become a better runner is running, which makes sense, right?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, actually, because as someone who is doing all these different sports, like, I don't do a ton of strength training, but I know that I need to be doing that to get faster, because especially like being older, I need to get those muscles and I need them to run and ride and all the things I do. But if I ever feel like I'm like lifting too much, then it like messes up my long run. And then I'm like, why did I do that like 3 days before? And I'm kind of like figuring that out now as an athlete. Like, I just really started doing, look, I try, strength training for me, it's like start and stop, you know? So mm-hmm. I think it's interesting to hear you say that, because like with the strength training.
Yeah, different stuff works for different people, right? So right. It's not a cookie cutter approach, especially on that side of things. I think everybody needs to find what works for them. And if you can make it a good routine for you, and it's something that doesn't affect the running side of things, then that's going to be ideal.
That's good advice.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so when you're not running, what are you into?
I'm a big basketball fan.
Okay.
So I'm a Pacers fan, and they're actually playing right now.
No,
that's fine. That's fine.
Like, should we put it on the TV?
No. They should win the game.
Okay.
So we shouldn't have problems.
Okay.
But I'll let you know if I.
So were you like super into March Madness as well?
I get into basketball this time, like NCAA basketball. Yeah, just in March really, but more NBA than anything.
Okay.
But yeah, spending time with my wife, she's an accountant, so this time of year is kind of busy for her.
Yeah.
But after April 15th, we'll start to spend a little more time together, which will be good. Just kind of spending time with family.
And where are you guys based? Where do you live?
Lake Orion, Michigan, okay. Which is close to Rochester, just metro Detroit area.
What advice do you have for runners that are listening?
I think it's important to remember that like everybody starts from a different point. And I know this because as a freshman in high school, I was a lot shorter than I am now and weighed a lot more than I do now. And so everybody finds running at a different spot. And I think the most important thing to always remember is just to try and be a better version of yourself than you were yesterday. It's not, I think it's easy to, when you're running with a group of people, it's easy to focus on results that other people are having and trying to beat that person or trying to keep up with this other person. But the most important thing I think to always focus on is be a better version of you today. And so that's kind of what has slowly allowed me to climb up a ladder and I think get to where I am today, is focusing on changes that I can make to make myself a better athlete. And so that's the focus. I think that's where people need to focus.
Yeah. And what I forgot to ask you, what do you do for like nutrition and hydration? Are you super dialed into all of that?
I think, running 100 to 130 miles a week, we have a furnace that's going to burn just about anything. Now that doesn't mean I eat just about anything. Mm-hmm. But I think I try to eat as clean as I can. And I eat until my body tells me that it's full. as long as you're doing that and eating clean and it's good quality food, that's the most important thing.
And then what about on the race course?
On the race course, that's a tricky thing just because every marathon's a little different.
Right.
I usually use Martin. The elites luckily have the bottles which is kind of nice. So I'm able to just kind of fill those up the night before and grab those from a table every 5K. And yeah, try to get as much down as I can. Not right away. I try to do the sip method, hold on to the bottle as long as I can.
Keith, what are your thoughts on nutrition and how do you approach this topic with your athletes?
Nutrition can be varied by a lot of people. I'd say one of the most important things that you need to keep in mind is when you're, especially them, training at a high volume of training, it's really important to get a large enough caloric intake. So my concern always as a coach is to make sure that people are eating enough. And that it's really hard to maintain that. You talked about during race nutrition, and that's something that we practice quite a bit. We really encourage all the athletes to work with different products out there, find what works best for them, what they can make sure they get down, what feels okay after you're 20 miles into a race instead of just, you know, on a 6 to 8 mile run, because it's different. So that's a big important part. We do not go into real specific diet components, but when needed, we have resources where we have people that need to see people that are more educated about it than I am. Exactly. Yeah. That can, you know, but from a endurance athlete standpoint,
right.
You know, so that's the thing. It's such a tricky thing because the caloric intake required is great. And I think the biggest mistake that I see people trying to get better is actually cutting back on caloric intake because they think it'll make them better, and temporarily it might make them better on a few runs, but it's not the answer. You know, so it's so important to make sure that we're eating properly and enough. I mean, Zach talked about, you know, you burn a lot. I mean, I've almost of the ilk sometimes that as long as you're eating enough of the right stuff, for them,
it's fine.
It's okay to eat other stuff sometimes too, because you're going to burn right through it. But you never want to substitute something that maybe isn't the right thing that you need to eat with some junk food for a meal. I mean, you know, that's not the substitute, you know, but it's important to make sure. I mean, I know a long time ago, sports nutritionist that would come speak that it worked through the governing body and stuff. And I know one of the things that I heard that I thought was really interesting was talking about viewing hunger the same way you view thirst. That if you're too hungry, if you're hungry, it's too late. Like they talk about in thirst.
Yeah.
It's the same thing so endurance athletes should be eating more frequently, and you'll naturally eat less if you're eating more frequently.
Right.
It's not like you're going to eat. You know, one of the studies that I heard that was done was really interesting, done by one of the nutrition bar companies. I don't know if it was Power Bar or Cliff or who knows what it was, but it was done. And what the whole idea was is that tell people to eat their regular 3 meals a day. Eat whatever you eat for breakfast, whatever you eat for lunch, whatever you eat for dinner. Just add to that a bar, some nutrition bar between breakfast and lunch, and between lunch and dinner. And what they found is that people just even the caloric intake. They ate less for dinner. They ate less for lunch because they weren't as hungry. But they did what needed to be done, is they spread out their calories. You know, so it was a matter of, like, you'd think adding two things to eat and then just keeping everything else the same would add calories, but it doesn't generally. You know, it just spreads them out and does a better job. So it's important to, whatever your workplace or whatever it might be, it's just to have a healthy snack that you can eat in between the meals and make sure that you keep that never too low or never too high. I mean, when you get too low, you'll overeat, and then it stores it differently. You know, so it's important to make sure that you are just nice, even level of caloric intake.
And now, are you still running?
I do, not enough. I run a couple miles a day at this point. You know, I ran, I mentioned earlier, I ran marathons when I was young. I ran a marathon when I was 13, a marathon when I was 14, ran 100 miles a week when I was a teenager. And I ran in college. Right now I run, like I say, just a couple miles a day. My wife, when I met, she ran, but I was running 70, 80 miles a week. Now she runs 70 miles a week and I run, you know, my 20 miles a week, you know? So she goes out for a run, comes and gets me. I go a couple miles with her, then she finishes her run. So that's how it works now. But I get some running in. Want to get a little bit more than I do, but I still get out every day.
You think that's something like that comes from the job, like now that you're so immersed in it as a coach, that you're like doing less of it?
You know, I mean, I don't know if that's it. I mean, it's just a matter of, you know, I mean, I definitely running a lot of miles when I was young. I got a little beat up at some points later on, you know, and so, but it's just, now I'm still motivated to be around it every day. I'm still motivated to get out and run. I mean, my son runs in college, and you know, and my daughter just starting college. She won't run in college, but so I'm around it a lot between the athletes and everybody and my wife. You know, I don't think that's it. I mean, I do like to get out and run, but just become a little bit more challenging than it used to be. So
awesome! And how much fun is it having Keith with you here in Boston this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, Keith and Kevin have been here out of countless times. Been over the course probably a million times, so they're definitely people that you want in your corner as you're preparing for races like this. And so to have them here to share stories of races past and moments that have happened. It's pretty cool. We have some historians for sure.
I'm sure.
So it's pretty special to be surrounded by that for sure.
What's your biggest takeaway? Like, you've been kind of doing your course recon. Like, where what are you thinking? Like,
Well, I haven't seen the course at all yet. Like, just
the
finish here.
Oh, okay. You haven't done like a drive through. Okay.
Yeah. So we'll do that as we're training for the race itself. We'll come out here and run the whole course. I'll get to see the whole course for the first time tomorrow as I drive on the women's lead vehicle. But yeah, I think just the weekend in general. I mean, it is crowded. It's definitely the holy land of marathon running for sure. So it's cool to see so many people make the journey. I mean, obviously a lot of people are racing, but I think there's so many people coming to support as well, and just people who are fans of running and the sport, and that's really cool. But it's definitely something that I'm glad I'm seeing to sort of prepare me for that when the time comes.
What is your, do you have a tip for Boston? Like, what's your, like, if you could give me like one thing about this race, like for athletes, what would it be?
Boston, more than any other course. So I talk about, you know, you want to be out conservatively. You don't want to get, but Boston's really hard because all the excitement around Boston, you got the downhill start, and it's just so easy to get out too fast. And what happens is your last 10K of Boston can be incredibly fast if you didn't beat your legs up too bad in the downhills in the early part. So you got to hold back in the early part to take advantage of how fast the last 10K can be, because nothing hurts worse than trying to run hard the last 10K. If you beat your quads up so bad in the downhills, you will run slower. The downhills will feel worse at the end. But you've got a stretch that's relatively fast the last 10K here. But once you get over heartbreak, once you get over, you know, the Newton Hills, if you've got anything left in you, you can take advantage of how fast it can be coming in. But if you ran too hard on the first 10K of the downhills because you think, oh, I feel so great, and it's downhill, it's just going to put some time in the bank. Time in the bank is the biggest marathon mistake you'll ever make in any marathon. In Boston, it's magnified.
This has been super great. Thank you both. Thank you so much for coming on here. This has been awesome.
Yeah, thank you for having us on.
Thanks again for tuning in to Marnie on the Move. If you like what you hear, leave us a 5-star review in Apple Podcasts. Follow us on social at Marnie on the Move for Facebook and Instagram. Head over to our website, MarnieOnTheMove.com, for more info on this episode, links in the show notes, and of course, sign up for our quarterly newsletter, The Download, to get updates, deals, giveaways, and information on future events.